All right, we'll proceed first, hearing from Mr. Alford.
Thank you. Chief Justice George and the members of this court, my name is Joe Alford, along with co-counsel Stuart Katz. We represent Petitioner Gary Ross. I will first start this by spending a few minutes discussing the FEHA cause of action, and co-counsel will then discuss the wrongful termination and violation of public policy tort. Your Honors, California has long been a pioneer in the field of anti-discrimination law. Its laws against disability discrimination predate those of the federal government by more than a decade.
That's at the gist of this whole case, isn't it? That California has been a pioneer, as you would call it. The federal government has not been. What do we do about placing an employer in the position of being a law violator under federal law, notwithstanding how understanding California may be with regard to a predicament such as that faced here?
Well, Your Honor, an employer is not being forced to be a law violator under federal law. There's absolutely no federal law that requires an employer to drug test an employee, much less to terminate that employee for a positive test, except in a very different context where a safety-sensitive position is involved.
But an employer is permitted to drug test an employee. Is he or she not permitted to condition employment on a passing of a drug test?
Well, yes, Your Honor, there's a two-part answer to that question. We're not challenging the fact that an employer is permitted to give a pre-employment drug test. This court decided in the Loader case that an employer is absolutely permitted to give a pre-employment drug test. The question is what happens with the results of that drug test. And as this court stated in the Loader case, when an employer gives a pre-employment drug test, one of the things that they must consider in deciding whether to retain that employee it are the considerations of independent doctors. In other words, this Loader case stands for the same proposition as does FEHA, which requires an individualized consideration of every employee.
And you mean under Loader? Oh, excuse me.
No, go ahead. Just sorry.
You mean under Loader, if the employee does not pass, forget the Compassionate Use Act for now, does not pass a drug test, the employer after that has to give consideration to the needs of employment and balance things before the employer can say you are terminated or you are not hired?
Yes, based on the California Code of Regulations, as this court cited in the Loader case, an employer must actually give consideration to the individualized opinions of doctors before they make their employment
opinions
decision.
Opinions regarding what?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You said it has to give consideration to the opinions of doctors once the employee has flunked the drug test. Opinions regarding what?
This court does not state exactly what those opinions would be. Presumably, though, it would mean that you would consider if a doctor has prescribed the substance for which the person tested positive. For instance, if they test positive for opiates, if a doctor has a prescription for OxyContin or Vicodin, presumably the employer would take that into account. And in this case, Raging Wire would have permitted the person to work. And as this court stated in the Maurer case, a person who uses marijuana pursuant to a doctor's recommendation ought to be treated under the law the same as any other person who has a prescription.
But Proposition 215 did not give marijuana the same status as a legally prescribed drug, did it?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct, and that was to avoid any direct conflict with federal law. Federal law, prescriptions are regulated.
Isn't that an important consideration in this case?
Well, no, Your Honor, because in this case is governed exclusively by state law. We have two causes of action, both of which are exclusively state law causes of action. And in this court, in the Maurer case, analogized the use of marijuana pursuant to a doctor's recommendation to the use of prescription medication. So tying that in with what this court stated in Loader about considering doctors' opinions, tying that in with the individualized assessment required under FEHA in each and every case, Raging Wire had an obligation to consider the doctor's recommendation. That person was then acting legally under California law, in particular the Compassionate Use Act, and under a straightforward application of the FEHA. The employer had an obligation to accommodate
but
Mr. Ross's.
The Compassionate Use Act says nothing about employer-employee relations or unfair labor practices, does it?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't explicitly state that. However, the Fair Employment and Housing Act is actually the basis for at least the cause of action I'm discussing. It's actually the Fair Employment and Housing Act.
And what exactly, pertaining to the FIHA, upon which you obviously rely heavily on, what particular provision of the FIHA are you relying on? Do you think it important for this court to take a look at the underlying purpose of FIHA? And if you can, would you articulate that particular purpose?
Yes, Your Honor. This case falls squarely within both the letter and spirit of the Fair Employment and Housing Act. Government Code Section 12940 specifically requires an employer to accommodate a person with disability unless it imposes an undue hardship on the employer.
In this case, what about Section 12920? Is that relevant to pertaining to your argument here? And naturally, later we'll hear from the other side. But I'm looking at Section 12920 of the Government Code, which says one of the FIHA stated purposes is, quote, to protect and safeguard the right and opportunity of all persons to seek, hold employment without determination, blah, 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 on account of physical disability. Now, focusing on the term physical disability, from your standpoint, are we here dealing with physical disability?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Ross has a disability in terms of he has back spasms and severe back pain.
And I further presume that these particular injuries were sustained while he was serving in the Air Force. And as I recollect from the facts, and naturally you can correct me when I don't have them right, but based upon my recollection of the facts, after he got out of the service with these presumably severe injuries, he tried a number of medications or whatever was prescribed, and they didn't work out. And my recollection is that under the facts of this particular case, his doctor then prescribed marijuana to deal with the chronic back pain. Is that it?
Yes, Your Honor, 1999.
Next question. Is it your view that under relevant California law, it is not a crime to be using marijuana when that is prescribed by a physician?
I believe that's well established, Your Honor.
But you would acknowledge that without a medical authorization, simply resorting to marijuana for whatever purposes would be illegal, right?
Yes, it would be illegal under California law.
I further presume that in listening to your oral argument, you have no problem with what this court said in Loader, right? An employer, of course, has a right to drug testing because I presume it was set out in Loader. This court recognized that the illegal use of drugs in turn leads to absenteeism, rejection, or lack of satisfaction on the part of other employees who see that this particular employee who has been using illegal drugs is not performing. You have no problem with Loader, right?
We don't take issue with Loader.
I presume, would it be correct to state that in this case, the emphasis from your standpoint, and I'm sure that the other side later on will have other input, but from your standpoint, in this particular case, the inquiry is not whether you agree with Loader, you do.
Yeah,
Loader, I presume, from your standpoint, is not on point in this particular case. From your standpoint, it is FIHA.
Yes, Your Honor. We believe Loader is perfectly consistent with our position.
Doesn't the Act implementing the Compassion Use Act address the employment situation? And it says that no employer is not required to make any accommodation with respect to marijuana, but that refers to on-duty, on-premises use, and can't one draw the inference that implicitly that off-duty, off-premises use is sanctioned, or proper at least?
Yes, Your Honor, we have certainly drawn that inference because the legislature does not make idle acts or say idle things.
So the legislature did contemplate a situation where employment or the employers were involved in somehow relating to the Compassionate Use Act.
Yes, Your Honor. The legislature here has spoken and has made clear that it was their understanding.
So under your analysis, it would be perfectly proper for the employee to arrive at work under the influence of marijuana.
No, Your Honor. We don't agree with that. We think that use
but
in the workplace.
In the hypothetical that Justice Moreno just gave you, it's perfectly all right to smoke it at home.
No, Your Honor.
At 8 o'clock and arrive at work at 9 o'clock under the influence.
No, Your Honor, under the rules of statutory construction, a statutory scheme is to be given a reasonable, common sense interpretation that's consistent with the law's purposes.
So you would say that it's only proper to use it after work?
Yes, Your Honor, that would be true, or using it when it's off duty. And we would include showing up to the work under the influence as use of the marijuana, because that would be a common sense interpretation.
Would your position, when an employer hires someone, they want some assurance that the employment will be continual employment, uninterrupted. And so how do you address the concern of employers that the person hired would be subject to federal arrest and prosecution for illegal drug use? That's my first question. Does the employer have a right to consider that issue? In other words, when faced with two equally qualified candidates for employment, one who does not violate federal law in terms of drug use and the other who does, is it inappropriate for the employer to make a choice based on the need for assured continual employment?
Yes, Your Honor, it would be inappropriate. That's precisely the sort of discrimination that's prevented by the Fair Employment and Housing Act.
So what happens, let's take it one step further. Let's say we accept your position, and then let's say the federal authorities do prosecute. Would it be inappropriate for the employer to terminate the employee based on that circumstance?
I believe it would be, Your Honor, but I would like to explain.
In other words, if the employee is charged and tried and convicted of illegal drug use under the federal law, and the employer took any steps adversely affecting the employee's employment, it's your position that the employer would be in violation of the Fair Employment and Housing Act. Is that right?
If the trial and prosecution did not affect the employee's ability to perform the essential functions of the job. As an initial matter, I would like to note the idea of a single patient being prosecuted by the federal government is wildly speculative, as Judge Kaczynski pointed out in the Conant case in footnote 10, where he explains essentially that the federal government does not go after individual patients. But taking this possible scenario into account, employers are faced under the Fair Employment and Housing Act consistently with some cost. There's some cost to an employer. The employer has to build a wheelchair ramp. That's going to cost the employer something. I mean, the FEHA does impose some burdens on employers. Here, the idea of the completely speculative possibility of a federal prosecution of an individual patient is not a cost that rises to an undue burden.
Well, let me interrupt you at this point. You are relying on FEHA, but don't we have to look at the Compassionate Use Act and what its purposes were? And in order to prevail on the FEHA argument, don't we have to assume that in enacting the Compassionate Use Act, the electorate intended to alter the responsibilities and privileges of the employer? And as I read the Compassionate Use Act, it speaks to precluding criminal prosecution to the physician or to the patient who is using with a prescription. It says nothing that I can tell. Well, you did mention earlier about using it on the premises, that the employee is not exempt from that. But if it were going to alter the rights of the employer to exclude someone who uses a drug that is illegal under federal law, don't you think it would have been brought to the attention of the electorate?
Well, it was actually
brought. You may respond, but your time is otherwise up.
Thank you, Your Honor. It was actually brought to the attention of the electorate in a ballot pamphlet argument against the Compassionate Use Act. But the way it makes sense is that under Loader, if you have a doctor's supervision of a substance, it's not drug abuse. And Loader was directed at drug abuse. The Compassionate Use Act makes using marijuana legal. It says expressly on its face that it was designed by the public to ensure the right of seriously ill Californians to use marijuana for medical use where that use has been recommended by a physician. And like the FEHA, the Compassionate Use Act must be liberally construed to effectuate the democratic process. The court is frequently called on the task of filling in gaps in the statutory scheme. We're simply looking for this court to effectuate the will of the electorate as well as the legislature and to employ the FEHA and the Compassionate Use Act together to their fullest extent. And with that, I'll turn it over to co-counsel.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Alford. Here now from Mr. Katz.
Thank you, Your Honor. Despite Gary Ross being fully able to perform and performing his job as a computer network administrator, he was terminated as a result of the course of treatment that he was undertaking, recommended by a doctor, and explicitly authorized by the state of California. He was fired in violation of fundamental, clearly articulated policies of the state and people of California that are rooted in four separate but interrelated sources. One.
But counsel, didn't the plaintiff have a long-standing disability based upon his injury while he was serving in the United States Air Force?
He did, Your Honor, and as stated in the complaint, with the use of marijuana under the supervision of a physician, he had previously, in the same industry as well as the brief time he worked for Raging Wire, performed his job as a computer system analyst satisfactorily with no performance problems at all. And further, the complaint indicates that he was able to perform his job fully while being a patient using medical marijuana.
Now, you were speaking of public policy. Certainly, it is the public policy of the state of California that employers not discriminate against employees who are suffering from a disability. And would you like to elaborate on that point with respect to how it requires an employer to hire someone who is using medical marijuana?
Well, Your Honor, the policy of FEHA, as I believe Justice Kennard pointed out, under 1290, is intended to include people into the workplace to fully participate in life regardless of any potential disability. Additionally, the argument, ballot arguments directly in 215, as well as the fact that 215 was intended to convey that all Californians who are medically qualified should have the right to obtain marijuana if the doctor thinks that's the thing to do. Also, SB 420, which is later codified under 11362.7 of the Health and Safety Code, specifically indicates that it's the policy to accomplish that by presumably allowing folks to work but not imposing a burden on the employer saying they can bring marijuana on the premises or that they can smoke or use marijuana on the premises. And part of the balancing the legislature went through for that was to avoid a situation where coworkers had, for example, exposure to secondhand smoke. So clearly this has been well contemplated by both the voters and the legislature.
Do the requirements of his position require an on-call status where he might be required to come in at an odd hour?
Well, the facts of this case are that he was fully able to perform the duties of his job, so I think that's truly a speculative question, Your Honor. In addition to 215, another source of the public policy we rely on here, in addition to FEHA, which has been discussed, is Probate Code Section 4650, which the legislature explicitly states that people have a fundamental right to make decisions concerning their health care. And the fourth source that we believe supports the public policy argument is the privacy protections afforded by Article 1, Section 1 of the California Constitution, in particular, the right to autonomy, privacy, and privilege in terms of determining decisions regarding your own medical care. So we believe that in terms of the policy, clearly it's set out there are multiple sources, both 215 and the privacy portion of the Constitution, which was passed by amendment in 1972 as Proposition 11. The people have clearly spoken in favor of those rights. The legislature has, both through the enactment of 4650 and SB 420.
But so they did not say anything about employers' rights and obligations, did they, in that compassionate use context?
The legislature, I believe implicitly, certainly did directly by talking about people, what their obligation, what they were not required to accommodate at the workplace. In SB 420, what they said, nothing in this article shall require, and it's 7.785, Your Honor, Section A, nothing in this article shall require any accommodation of any use of marijuana on the property or premises of any employment or during the hours of employment. So for the legislature to have said, you don't have to accommodate this on your premises or during the hours of employment, certainly implicitly suggests that the only logical inference to be made was that they would have to accommodate an employee lawfully using it while off the premises, not during working hours.
Well,
and
they
that's
could have
also,
said that, but they didn't, of course.
Well,
it's left to inference and argument by yourself.
It's left to statutory construction that we're obviously asking the court to do, and certainly there's the amicus brief filed by the five legislators that further express their belief in that. And the use of the word accommodations in SB 420 would only make sense in the context that they're assuming people are going to be working, and accommodations is sort of a FIA term of art. I believe the legislator's brief also points that out.
Now, does your argument depend on your violation of public policy argument depend on our agreeing with co-counsel's argument that this termination violated FIHA? Or were the court to find that it didn't violate FIHA, based on what you've just said, would there be other public policies that it would violate?
Absolutely.
And that would be privacy?
It would be privacy, number one. Number two, it would be the probate code section 4650. And third, it would be contrary to the terms of Proposition 215 and the subsequent legislation concerning that, SB 420. So, yes, I believe that all of those could be independent bases or basis for the court's decision in Mr. Ross's favor in this part of the act.
So, basically, as I understand your position, it's that in the state of California, an employer, all other things being equal and all right, is not free to fail to hire an employee who is using marijuana under the Compassionate Use Act, even though marijuana use is illegal under federal law.
Assuming he can perform his job? Yes, that's correct.
Counsel, suppose the people of the state, through the initiative process or the legislature, adopted a statute that brought undocumented workers within the protection of the Fair Employment and Housing Act and made it illegal for employers to discharge undocumented workers based on their status, in contrast to federal law. Would your position be the same if confronted with that situation?
Well, if there was a direct conflict, clearly no. I don't know if that would be a direct conflict, candidly, though in California there is, for example, Farmer Brothers Coffee versus Workers' Compensation Appeals Board. There are situations where California has extended the right to benefits to workers that federally are illegal workers. But it, certainly if there's a direct contradiction of the law, then obviously the federal law must be followed.
Assuming that you still have a minute to spare, I just need some clarification. I thought that earlier, in response to questions from the bench, you argued that from your standpoint, in taking a look at the Compassionate Use Act, even though it doesn't expressly talk about employment rights, you implicitly see in that particular act a concern about employment rights. Is that it?
Absolutely.
You may respond, but your time is up.
Certainly. Absolutely, for the following reasons. Number one, it references making it available to all medically qualified Californians, including those who presumably work. Number two, it specifically addresses the prohibition against any adverse professional consequences, which would include employment to physicians. And thirdly, because of the arguments in the ballot that there were specifically addressed, the fact that the possible repercussions are used in the workplace. So for those three reasons, yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Katz. We'll now hear from Mr. Patterson.
Thank you. If, as counsel says, this is fundamentally a case under the Fair Employment and Housing Act, then our work is done. And the reason our work is done is because the Fair Employment and Housing Act specifically says that use of unlawful drugs is not protected. It's in the statute, Government Code Section 12926K6. Physical disability does not include substance use disorders resulting from the current unlawful use of controlled substances or other drugs.
In the use of the term unlawful, is there any reference to any distinction between state and federal or, for that matter, local law?
There is not. It says simply unlawful use. And here, of course, we have use of marijuana, although for medical purposes under California law.
But under California law, and I'm sure that you probably recall some of the dialogue between the bench and the council earlier. Under the law, the legislature of the state of California has decreed it not to be a crime to be using medical marijuana, assuming, of course, that it is prescribed by a physician. So when we talk about unlawful use, I obviously, opposing counsel, as you must have heard earlier, has no problem, for instance, with this court's Loader decision pertaining to unlawful use of unlawful drugs. But as I gather from opposing counsel's argument, the crux of the matter here is not the unlawful use, but the medically authorized use of marijuana to deal with chronic back injuries. Isn't that a distinction? Well, naturally, from your standpoint, being an oral advocate, yes, I too would talk about unlawful drugs, but we have to talk also about the FIHA.
Well, the fact that under certain circumstances there's a defense to a criminal charge of marijuana possession or use does not really address the employment circumstances, nor does it address the fact that marijuana possession and use remains illegal under federal law.
Counsel, how do you address Judge Kosinski's observation that although it may technically be a violation of federal law, as a practical matter, you don't see any prosecutions at the federal level, and therefore it's a theoretical possibility that doesn't deserve much credit?
There are two responses to that. One of them is that although it might be a theoretical possibility, the fact is that an employer remains open to the possibility that its workplace will be disrupted if federal agents come in one day wanting to speak to this employee. The potential for disruption, regardless of whether there might be prosecution, remains. And why should we put ourselves in that position? The second is that, as this court recognizes in Loader, and we all seem to agree that Loader is a good decision that remains active,
but
the court identified a host
of
reasons.
In this particular case, it would seem, as opposing counsel has argued.
I beg your pardon, I didn't hear.
I'm sorry for interrupting. Probably just go ahead with your argument. I was just thinking out loud.
I apologize. Simply that the court has recognized that there are certain workplace costs that are attendant to the social costs that come with use or abuse of controlled substances. And in our view, Loader makes it quite clear that an employer has the right to deal with the potential of those circumstances so that it can have a productive workplace.
Well, opposing counsel, in response to my question with respect to Loader, said yes, but it's not an absolute right. The employer has to take into consideration that the illegal substance, or substance that would be illegal if not prescribed by a physician, was prescribed by a physician and was necessary for a condition. Why does that not obtain with respect to prescribed marijuana?
Because it's not actually prescribed even under California law. Prescription is defined under the regulations implementing the Controlled Substances Act to have a specific meaning. The Compassionate Use Act in California doesn't speak to prescriptions. It says recommendation. And the Ninth Circuit has recognized that there's a big difference between a prescription and a recommendation. In the Conant case, the court said, the Ninth Circuit said that if a doctor prescribes marijuana, regardless of California law, that doctor is open to prosecution under the Controlled Substances Act. Whereas if the doctor recommends a patient use marijuana to treat a condition, that's an exercise of free speech rights under the First Amendment. This is a very important distinction.
So it's your position that the compassionate, that FEHA never protects never protects the use of illegal drugs?
I think FEHA says that explicitly.
And how do you then make the leap to this case, since the Compassionate Use Act says it's okay to use it for medical purposes?
It's not a leap, because the Compassionate Use Act says it's a defense to a criminal charge. As many of the justices have observed, the Compassionate Use Act says nothing about the employment relationship. It says nothing about employment practices.
But you're dealing in this particular case more than simply the Compassionate Use Act. At first glance, I would agree with you. The Compassionate Use Act, the plain language of that particular act, doesn't support, again at first glance, the opposing counsel's view. But what about the argument that in this particular case, we are dealing not only with the Compassionate Use Act, but we have the FEHA that talks about an employer's obligation to give reasonable accommodation with respect to an employee with a certain disability. And we have heard, or at least in the briefs, it has been argued that the reasonable accommodation that the opposing side is arguing for is the medical use of marijuana outside of working hours. My question to you is, because this has not been brought out, I think, earlier, was there any showing by your client that the requested accommodation placed an undue burden on the employer?
The complaint does not allege that, and since this is a pleading case, we have to rely on the allegations of the complaint. But there are several things that occur to me about that. One of them is that to the extent FEHA creates an obligation to accommodate those with disabilities, there's nothing in the complaint that alleges a failure to accommodate. There's nothing that alleges that there was any request of the employer to engage in the interactive process by which the employee and the employer are able to identify potential reasonable accommodations. Secondly, is it a reasonable accommodation that somebody engages in illegal activity?
I know you keep talking about illegal activity, and I keep getting back to the same thing. Look, under the Compassionate Use Act, it is not a crime when one is using marijuana that has been recommended by a physician. This is why, at least for purposes of oral argument and listening to both sides, my reading of relevant case law and the statute is, look, Loader is not on point in this particular case. I don't think that opposing counsel has articulated a problem with Loader. It says that, of course, an employer has the right to drug testing because of concerns of absenteeism, etc., etc. But here, the wrinkle is that you've got the FEHA, and the reasonable accommodation that's required under FEHA. Question to you is, state law allows medical marijuana when recommended by a physician. Of course, as we know, federal law is completely to the contrary. Any possession, no matter whether a prescription, whether there has been a recommendation by a physician, that is just irrelevant under federal law. Is it your view that in a case such as this, it's federal law that trumps, irrespective of the concern of the California legislature pertaining to the compassionate use, et cetera, et cetera?
We do have to comply with both sets of laws, and that's the rub.
But if you acknowledge that we have to comply with both sets of laws, then there is a problem with FEHA.
But that's exactly what takes us back to FEHA. Because, again, the employer's accommodation under FEHA, the employer's obligation under FEHA, is to engage in the interactive process to talk about reasonable accommodations. The California courts have made very clear that FEHA does not obligate an employer to choose the best accommodation or the specific accommodation a disabled employee or applicant seeks.
So what is unreasonable, because you acknowledge, you get back to FEHA and you acknowledge in your argument, this court would have to deal, of course, with FEHA, and this court, of course, would have to take a look at the phrase reasonable accommodation. In this particular case, where is the reasonable accommodation on the part of the employer?
There's nothing in the complaint that alleges anything that allows us to speak to that. The only thing the complaint tells us is that Mr. Ross used marijuana. He tested positive for it.
And he told the client before the testing, by the way, you know, I'm applying for this job. I am using medical marijuana. Here is the recommendation from my physician. Then the drug testing took place, and they told him, you're fired because you've been using marijuana. And it matters not that it was recommended by a physician.
Because, again, we're stuck with the bind of it being an activity that's, while it may be legal under California law, it's not legal under federal law.
That gets me back to my first question. So you getting your answer then, backtracking, and based upon your answer right now, is that given the conflict between state law and federal law trumps. Is that it?
It's not a matter of trumping. It's a matter of what accommodation is reasonable.
Mr. Patterson, on the point of reasonable accommodation, I just want to clarify. You said earlier that the complaint didn't allege anything about failure to accommodate. Did I hear that correctly?
I believe so.
So does that mean that our discussion about what would be a reasonable accommodation in this case is not exactly on point of the posture of this case?
Well, it's not exactly within the realm of FEHA. The problem here is that FEHA describes what is a reasonable accommodation. It talks about modifications to the job. It talks about specialized equipment. It talks about variations in the hours of work. It doesn't talk about using illegal drugs as a reasonable accommodation. And so how can that be reasonable? In addition, although counsel have suggested that in the Medical Marijuana Program Act, the legislature used the FEHA term of art in describing, saying nothing in the article shall require any accommodation of medical use of marijuana on the part of the employer, that's not the term of art. The term of art is reasonable accommodation, which has a specific definition.
So were this court to hold hypothetically that if you have an employee who is using prescribed marijuana, whose performance is excellent and he doesn't use on the premises, an employer under the circumstances is required to retain that employee, notwithstanding the fact that the prescribed marijuana is illegal, would we be going beyond the posture of the case? Because we would be saying, as Justice Kennard's questions are seeking answers to, that that accommodation would be appropriate for an employer under those circumstances to overlook the fact that the drug was illegal under federal law, since that doesn't inconvenience the employer in any way that we've heard about, and could therefore accommodate the particular medication prescribed. Is that going beyond what the complaint is seeking?
I don't see that it is.
All right. So I just don't want to go off on a tangent myself about accommodation versus just termination.
But you raise another excellent point, and that is, what is the inconvenience or what is the problem for the employer?
Yes, what is it?
And there are a number. Among them are the fact that if you have an employer that wants to contract with the government, under state law as well as under federal law, both state and federal governments have drug-free workplace acts. And those require the government contractor with the state, to certify that they are not employing people who use unlawful substances.
But is that present in this case?
Well, the complaint doesn't get that far. We don't have that yet. As a matter of fact, respondent is a government contractor. So that's a very real concern. Now, what does an employer do with this information? Well, there may well be other employers who are more than willing to employ somebody who has been recommended to use marijuana for medical purposes. And in fact, the complaint tells us that that was the case with Mr. Ross. The complaint says in paragraph 21 that he worked for a period of a couple of years in similar positions for other employers, apparently without incident.
So your basic position is that nothing in our state law, implied or explicit, mandates an employer to take on an otherwise satisfactory employee who nevertheless is using a drug illegal under federal law but legal under California law.
That's correct.
Are there other examples that come to mind involving conduct that may be criminal under federal law but not a criminal offense under state law?
Not beyond what we discussed earlier that comes immediately to mind. But certainly, an employer
How about something like bank robbery? As I understand it, that's a federal offense. I don't know that it's ever prosecuted under state offense. I don't know that a state has jurisdiction. Or how about counterfeiting federal currency? I'm just trying to isolate some offenses that are peculiarly federal that are not perhaps even addressed under state law.
Sure. Those are all, they all create the potential, in my mind, again, for a disruption of the employer's workplace. Federal agents searching for someone who they suspect has robbed a bank or is counterfeiting, coming into the workplace. The employer knows about that person's activity. Is it possible that the federal agents would say, well, you're harboring this person or you're in some way complicit with the illegal activity? Those are genuine concerns.
Is it important that the Compassionate Use Act did not give marijuana the same status as other legal prescription drugs?
I think it is important. I think it's very important because the use of other legal prescription drugs is, of course, legal. The use of marijuana is not under federal
law. And what is your response to opposing counsel's argument that plaintiff cannot use marijuana and come to work under the influence? Wouldn't that be a reasonable accommodation if he were tested when he came to work and found to be under the influence?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
In other words, rather than in this situation where he is fired a few days after because he is tested positive, suppose he was tested on his second day at work and found to be under the influence. Wouldn't that be a reasonable accommodation? Sure, we'll give you a chance, but if you come to work under the influence, we're going to fire you.
It's hard for me to speak to this question of being under the influence.
It's hypothetical.
It is.
A vague one.
One thing that I observe, though, is, again, with respect to the complaint, it speaks of Mr. Ross's use of medical marijuana, that he has taken marijuana for several years.
Well, isn't there a difference between being under the influence and simply having the drug detectable in your system?
Well, I don't know that that's the case. And one of the things that strikes me is that if the complaint alleges, as the complaint alleges, that he uses marijuana to control pain and spasms, but is able to come to work, that must mean that the use of the marijuana, if it was the evening before, is still having a continuing effect. Otherwise, how would he be able to do his work? So it's difficult to say that he's not under the influence, even though he may have ingested the marijuana some hours before. And in addition, we have a concession from the petitioner. It's in their answering brief that they agree that use is more than the mere act of ingestion. So the fact of continuing influence must be there. It seems to me it's on the face of the complaint.
Would your position be the same if he had a prescription instead of a recommendation from a physician, even though that's not permissible even under federal law for this controlled substance?
If he had a prescription, that would be legal.
But that's not possible under federal law for marijuana, is that correct?
Correct.
Now, can you think of any other situations where a person with a treatable medical condition is precluded from working because the medication itself is, that he's taking is illegal under federal law? Are there any comparable situations?
Because the medication taken is illegal?
Yes.
I'm not aware of any.
So this would be the only circumstance you can think of?
Well, it's the only circumstance that occurs to me based on what's before us.
Counsel, I know your primary argument is that the Compassionate Use Act did not purport to encompass employer-employee relationships. But let's assume that such an act did, and did expressly purport to make it illegal for an employer to discharge an employee based on the employee's use of marijuana recommended by a physician. What would your position be in that case?
It still puts the employer in a bind. We still have the problem of arguably being complicit in activity that's not legal under federal law. And that's a tremendous bind for us.
How is that against federal law? The employer is not using or possessing the marijuana.
Well, again, if the employer happens to be a government contractor that must comply with the Drug-Free Workplace Act, they have to certify that they're not employing somebody who's using unlawful substances. And again, that's the bind. In addition, again, we keep coming back to Loader, but the court has articulated all sorts of reasons why drug use or abuse is a problem in the American workplace.
But I think everyone with an ounce of common sense would agree to that. This case isn't simply, as you articulate, a matter of someone's use of illegal drugs. We keep getting back, or I keep getting back, because you keep talking about illegal drug use, and i.e. a crime. But under California's Compassionate Use Act, this particular use by this particular person in this particular case is allowed under California law. What we have is a conflict between two laws. And we've got to deal with the FIHA, and we've got to deal with the federal law. And even though, in response to my earlier questions, you did not see it as a matter of federal law trumping, but you keep getting back to the federal law, which is, of course, a matter that you heavily rely on, because that law doesn't allow any use, for medical use or whatever, of marijuana.
I didn't discern a question.
Well, it keeps I keep getting back to my question. Yes. Do we ultimately, I mean, from your standpoint, given the conflict, just rely heavily on federal law, which says any use whatsoever of marijuana is not tolerated under federal law? Isn't that the crux of your argument?
It's an important component of it, absolutely.
That's what I wanted to get.
Yes. One of the things that the petitioner's briefs have suggested is that by not employing Mr. Ross, we are in some way punishing him. We're not punishing him. We're not preventing his use of recommended marijuana. He's still free to do those things. It's simply that if he does, we're not obligated to employ him.
Now, before the Compassionate Use Act, this case wouldn't be before us, am I right? If the employee were using marijuana, as people did, I understand, for management of pain, there'd be no question the employer did not have to. So we've talked a lot about FEHA, and we've touched on the Compassionate Use Act. But isn't the Compassionate Use Act and what it intended to do really central to this case? And as I look at the Act, what it did was protect the user and the involved physician from criminal prosecution. Is that correct?
Yes.
So there has to be a connection made between that purpose and policy to requiring an employer to hire someone or not to terminate someone who is using under that act. And at the moment, I don't see how the two are connected.
And we certainly agree with that. There does not seem to be a connection.
Unless it's a public policy, which is the second position of opposing counsel, that even without FEHA, the Compassionate Use Act, constitutional privacy, and other provisions permit an individual under these circumstances to use marijuana without detriment. And have you responded to that part, the privacy and the other public policy arguments?
Not orally, but I'm happy to do so. There, in addition to the Fair Employment and Housing Act, the FEHA, petitioner has identified a couple of other potential sources of public policy. One of them is with respect to the probate code and one's ability to choose the medical care of their own choosing. And once again, our employment decisions don't affect that. Our employment decisions don't impede anybody from making a choice about what medical treatment they prefer or they should seek. It only means that if someone chooses to treat themselves in this particular manner, we're not obligated to employ them. That doesn't interfere with their ability to make the choice of treatment. And with respect to the privacy issues, this court really addressed those very thoroughly, again, in the Loader case, that employers have interests in the efficient and economical operation of their businesses that justify them determining whether an applicant for employment may be using illegal drugs and choosing not to hire that person, not to employ that person. So there really are no public policy bases that have any sufficiency to support that particular claim in the complaint.
In dealing with the claim of wrongful discharge in violation of public policy, you just articulated there is no public policy involved at all. Did I hear correctly?
Yes.
What about the argument that the FEHA does articulate a public policy? Certainly you're not arguing that FEHA doesn't articulate a public policy.
No. And in that respect, it's not that FEHA doesn't articulate a public policy, but it's that the petitioner cannot make out a claim under FEHA here. And if he can't make out a claim under FEHA, then it follows that he could not articulate the parallel sort of claim that he would try to bring as under a public policy theory. With that, Your Honors, unless there are further questions.
Apparently not.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Elford, I believe you'll be arguing in rebuttal.
Yeah, thank you, Chief George. Paragraph 24 of the complaint alleges that there was no reasonable accommodation made here, so I think that clarifies that. We are not claiming that Mr. Ross is disabled because of his use of illegal drugs, which was the opening contention made by opposing counsel. We're claiming his disability is his bad back. Given that his disability is his bad back, this case involves a straightforward application of FEHA to the facts of this case. The employer has an obligation to accommodate Mr. Ross, and Mr. Ross is asking for the barest minimum accommodation possible, which is simply that he not be fired for using the one substance that's able to make him a more healthy and productive worker.
But do you agree with opposing counsel that FEHA never protects the use of illegal drugs?
I thank you for asking that question, Your Honor. The employer here is asking for this court to carve out a tremendous exception to FEHA that is inconsistent with both its history and its text. There's nothing in the text of FEHA that says...
So the answer is yes or no, and then you can give me your explanation.
The answer is no. There's no exception in FEHA for illegal drug use. In fact, FEHA, Government Code Section 12940, specifically does have an exception.
And the Compassionate Use Act does not make marijuana legal.
Right.
It does not place it in the category of a legal prescription for drugs.
It makes marijuana legal under California law.
It makes it non-criminal.
Well, it does more than that, Your Honor. It ensures the right of seriously ill patients to be able to use marijuana where a doctor has recommended that use of marijuana. So it ensures that right. And
but
that's
vis-a-vis criminal prosecution. It doesn't say anything about employment rights, does it?
Well, this court is frequently filled with or charged with the task of filling in the gaps of the statutory scheme. And it's common for an initiative to have collateral effects, for an initiative to have effects that even the drafters of the initiative didn't necessarily realize it would have that effect. And it's the task of this court to fill in the gaps of the statutory scheme.
But not to rewrite the statute either.
We're not asking for the court to rewrite the statute. We're asking for the court to apply FEHA in a manner that is... suggested the idea is that we're simply asking for a straightforward application of FEHA. Loader says employers need not tolerate drug abuse. The Compassionate Use Act makes clear that the California electorate does not view medical marijuana use as drug abuse. And so it takes it out of what is tolerated in Loader and brings it directly then under the Fair Employment and Housing.
What do we do with the conflict? The question I ask of opposing counsel. Just looking at state law, yes, I can see why you rely heavily on it. Taking a look at federal law, which is in direct opposition to state law, I can see why opposing counsel relies on federal law. What is this court going to do with this conflict between state law and federal law?
Your Honor, there is no conflict. There may be a tension. Clearly, California has chosen to tread a different path than the federal government. There is no federal law that requires an employer to terminate a medical marijuana patient under the facts of this case. The Drug-Free Workplace Act, cited by opposing counsel, does not require drug testing of persons in non-safety-sensitive positions, much less would it require the termination of someone for testing positive for marijuana. There is no federal law.
Well, when you say there is no conflict between the two laws, what about the point that one would could certainly make and to which I would ask you to give an answer? Federal law prohibits possession of marijuana even for medical use. That, at least in my view, is in direct conflict with what state law allows.
It's true that Mr. Ross may be engaged in somewhat of a conflict, but Raging Wire is not being forced to engage in any conflict. The Drug-Free Workplace Act prohibits use, possession, and distribution of marijuana in the workplace. And again, the key words, the Drug-Free Workplace Act is consistent with SB 420, which is consistent with the laws of many other medical marijuana states, which is to prohibit use in the workplace. And the words in the workplace have to be given meaning. And that suggests that outside the workplace is simply not governed by those laws. There's no federal law, and again, this, I mean, bears repeating, there's no federal law that Raging Wire is being forced to violate by accommodating Mr. Ross's drug use. And again, under FEHA itself, it explicitly, right up front, contains an exception for federal security regulations. An employer is not required to accommodate an employee if it would violate federal security regulations. And where the legislature has explicitly pointed out an exception to the statutory scheme, the court is not to engage in including other exceptions that aren't expressed. And that's precisely what Raging Wire is requesting in this case, that this court carve out an exception in FIHA for all illegal drug use, which is nowhere expressed in FIHA and is belied by the fact that FIHA itself explicitly contains a single exception for the violation of federal security regulations, which clearly are not involved here.
Would the requested accommodation place an is there a showing here that the requested accommodation by your client, the employee, has placed an undue burden on the employer?
No, Your Honor, there's absolutely no undue burden. They have come up with some very speculative possibilities about the feds coming into the place of employment, something that Conant makes clear, that Kaczynski and his Conant concurrence makes clear is completely speculative compared to the cost that employers bear all the time in order to accommodate disabled workers. This would not be an undue accommodation.
And you may recall that when I asked that very question of opposing counsel, the answer was, can't answer that question, not election the complaint.
You may respond, but your time is otherwise up.
We certainly agree, Your Honor, that neither the trial court nor the Court of Appeal should have sustained the demur. Of course, we are arguing that the demur be overruled, and we are doing so because the California electorate has made clear that it's the policy of this state to ensure the right of medical marijuana patients. In fact, they explicitly encourage it in the context of distribution channels, which appears also to be outside of the criminal context. We're simply asking for this court to effectuate the will of the California electorate and no longer leave medical marijuana patients as second-class citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Alford. Thank you, Mr. Katz. Mr. Patterson, the matter stands submitted.